Thank you, Erin, and thank you organizers of this week's event. I don't want to keep you too long. I know you must be wanting to stand up. I feel like I want to stand up. I'm a residential school survivor. I was born in Standing Buffalo Reserve in Saskatchewan, which is just about an hour northeast of Regina. I went into residential school when I was 6 years old. I came out when I was 12. I was out a year, and I was put into the CAS, Canadian, the Children's Aid Society. And from there, I went to different group homes and for a couple of years, and I kept on running home. I always tried to get home. It just, you know. But every time I tried that, I got caught and I was sent back. I was sent back somewhere, put in lock. And this last time I was locked up, I was in solitary confinement by the time I was 13 in a white room. And that was the first time I ever thought of suicide. I guess it's when you think that there's nothing left to live for, that everything is done. My mother is Dakota, my dad is Cree. So my mom, her people are from the Dakotas originally, before there were borders, and my father is Northern Saskatchewan Cree. So I grew up in this country knowing, I guess, thinking right away, very young. I didn't know the word for it, colonialism. And the question, one of the questions is, how do we decolonize? I didn't start the process, I think, of decolonizing until I was 43. I married a Jewish man. I have five children, who are all now grown. And I raised those children, never thinking back about residential school. It was somewhere, it happened to somebody else. It didn't happen to me. And it wasn't until later when my children started to leave home, growing up and leaving home. I didn't know that that's what happens. Children grow up and leave home. Because I was taken when I was so young. I didn't even know what is the norm. So when my children started to leave home, it left great huge gaps in my life. And it wasn't shortly after that my marriage came apart. And it was at that point, they always say there's always something in your life that brings you back to what you have forgotten. And that separation was what took me back to what I had forgotten. And that was when I had been removed from my family when I was six. And what that does to a child, psychologically, you have no protection from anything. You learn, you grow up, you don't have boundaries. You don't even know what boundaries are. You just do what you're told. You get through it by doing what you're told. And when I was 43, by 45, the residential school settlement started to come out. You started to hear about this settlement. And I was already living in the city. And this was the first time after 25 years of being away from Native people. I was in a little town, it was predominantly white. I was in a white church, and I was married to a Jewish husband. So I was trying to figure my way through this. To me, my life is a journey. It is a journey, because wherever I go, I have to learn what's here. And as a child, you learn that going through residential school, you learn that very, very fast. You have nobody there on anywhere to lean on, to call for. And as I grew up, growing up like that, growing up in group homes, and then being in a Jewish family that I didn't know that in a Jewish family, Jewish mothers like their sons to marry nice Jewish girls. Well, I didn't know that. I didn't know Jewish from anything. They didn't teach us anything in residential school. They didn't have a library. I didn't read my first book until I was 15. I didn't know anything. As soon as I came out of group homes, I found myself married and then taking care of babies. And I would have been quite happy taking care of babies, except my babies grew up. And then I had to face me all over again. And where did I come from? And that, to me, I think was the hardest period, where when I came to Toronto and I didn't know anybody, this is where I met other Native people. And this is where, when I came to Toronto, because I'd been away from Native people for so long, I thought everybody had changed just like me. But when I came into Toronto and I found Native people lying on the ground, on the streets, I found the same problems. So what do? I was there all by myself, so I opened a house. And I started inviting Native people off the streets who had no home to come and get a room at my house. And over that 6.5 year period, I must have housed at least 65 to 70 people going through that house, just coming off the streets. I've seen a few of them die since on the streets in Toronto. It's a tough place to be. It's a tough place to learn. And that's where I had to go and learn what I had to learn. And the way I grew up in Regina, when I went there in the summertime and after a year of residential school, you can go home for 2 months. I lived in what's called Indian Ghetto. We had no money. I didn't know what money was. We didn't grow up with money. On the reserve, we had no money. There was no money. There was no stores. You went to fish. You caught your rabbits. There was no money. So when I came to Toronto, I had to learn how to live around money, because I didn't have to worry about money. I was married to a nice Jewish man. When I think about that, I thought he was a good manager. He knew about money, and he knew, you know, and I didn't know anything. And so when I dropped myself down in Toronto, I still didn't know anything. And I had to learn it all on that hard ground. And I started in radio in 1999. I was taken down to CKLN, and they needed somebody. Well, they just kept on telling me to come down, and I just kept on wondering why, until finally I went with them, and my first program was an hour and a half on International Women's Day. And I only ended up there because they said they needed a Native woman host, and I was the only one there. So that's how I got my first start in community radio, 9 years, and I didn't know what that was about. Doing frontline activism work, political activism work, is one hard road. And it's even harder if you're Native. Because, like somebody said to me tonight, you don't have the supports that we have, like in Palestine. You're alone. And it was tough work. But we were the ones who shut down the Adams mine, from taking Toronto's garbage up to the Adams mine. I got myself on the front page of the Toronto Star with my arms around a security guard's neck. And that happened totally by... He was yanking on a friend, a woman's arm, the security guard, and everybody was sitting like that, and nobody was making a move. And I didn't even know how I got there, except when I became aware of what I was doing. I was holding a security guard by his neck. And then I just figured the only place to be safe is down in council chambers, so I took off down there when I saw other security guards coming for me. And when I ran down there, I remember everybody stood up and was laughing. And I didn't know what they were laughing about until later that day somebody told, it was the next day, and in the Toronto Star, Mel Lastman said to the reporter that I was trying to get him. So you can see, like, what a fiasco. And I had no idea what I was getting myself into when I started doing this kind of work. And I really commend the people who put themselves forward. My face right now, I'm all marked up. 2007, my whole body broke down. Just broke down, collapsed. Because I was, you know, I always said I'm like a three-legged horse. I'm out there trying to get where I need to go, and I don't have what I need. So when somebody says to you, we need that money for legal defense, if you got 10 bucks in your pocket, you're going to spend it on coffee anyway. So give it where you can, because that little bit of 10 bucks will go a long way for somebody who's out there. I was telling a story to somebody tonight. I used to have to go and beg off these guys on the street who were panhandlers if I could get a loonie from them so I could go buy some batteries for my little tape recorder when I go to meetings. It's tough work. And when you do that kind of work, you put yourself forward. I got all these books in front of me because I've been, you know, I do a lot of reading. And in these books, I'm, you know, all talking about Canada and colonialism. And most of all, I think Thomas King, you know, is the one who spoke to me, because he said, and I'll just read this to you, he said, the truth about stories is that's all we are. You can't understand the world without telling a story. There isn't any center to the world but a story. And I think for me, being a survivor, I had to go back to those stories. I had to go back in my body, letting my body remember. I took 2 years at the Gestalt Institute of Therapy, doing heavy-duty body work, to get back to the child who had been buried so far back I could hardly remember her. And I grew up in those schools in fear. And that's what I realized. I don't have a very thick skin. I grew up in fear, continuous fear. Fear of being punished. And we were hurt in those places. We were neglected. We weren't cared for. And when you see Native people out there, and they, you know, people say, oh, you're like, you know, those lazy Indians. If we want to be lazy, we'll be lazy. This is our land. If we want to sit down, we don't want to get up, that's exactly what we're going to do. So my story has been very much a survivor story. And going through the settlement took me up and down and inside out, because I believed what they said. I believed that they were really going to make an effort to make a reconciliation, to give us what, to make sure that we were going to be okay. My settle amounted to $250 a month for 7 years. I was in there for 7 years. They're going to give me $250 a month. And to me, at that time, Mulrooney got $30 million for defamation of his name. So I thought, you spit at me, and you give him a bucket of water. I ain't taking that. And there's one thing about abuse. You learn this in psychology class. If you're going to finish it, you define it. And the only thing that you've got left to say is no. And if that's the only power you've got, then by means, take it. Because you know what that does? You want to talk about what to do about all of this? Just say no. Say no as many times as you can. Because that's all you've got. say no to the car and walk or ride a bicycle. It ain't easy to say no. People said, you know, take your $31 and run. Man, that's a lot of money. Well, I always thought about it. I'm a writer, so I thought, you know, they sold Jesus for 30 pieces of silver. You know, you want to give me $30,000 for what I went through, for what I lost, and you want me to keep my mouth shut? Well, one thing I had to do in residential school, I had to keep my mouth shut. Thomas King talks about words in here and about storytelling. And he talks about the people who spoke their languages. And I really appreciated Clinton speaking his language because I don't speak mine. We were prevented from speaking ours. Our language was taken away. Now I have English. And now I'm going to use this English for all it's worth. Because now we can understand one another. The only thing what we have to do with this language is make sure it's right. Because this language is being twisted as much as the system is twisted. You see it every day out there in the newspapers. You see the propaganda. You see it coming at you from everywhere. And you have to decipher it and figure out what is real, what is truth, what is lies. We're living in it. We're having to figure out our way through it. I'm not the only survivor here. Every one of you sitting here is a survivor now. Whether you see it yet or whether you don't. The people in Japan are all sitting around having their dinners, doing what they do every day. But that's not the case today. Who do we think we are that we can just sit back and cruise? If we want to do anything, then we better just start waking up, shake ourselves up, make ourselves do something. We need change. We're all screaming about change, yet we change nothing. Look at us all. How many millions of people across this country? Look what's happening to this country. And what do? We all talk about it. What in practical terms can we do? That's the question. We can sit and talk about it until there's nothing left. Well, I got sick in 2007, and I didn't think I was going to make it, but 2008, I've never been in so much pain in my entire life, and I don't know where it came from. But I'll tell you one thing that it taught me. It taught me that no matter how much the pain, and as long as my life is inside of me, I have a spirit that can override the pain. I can override physical discomfort. So many things that if you allow yourself to stick with it, to stick beyond the, because the pressure is coming. We can all feel it. There's not one of us that doesn't feel it. And this pressure ain't gonna stop. The only way we're gonna stop it is if we stop. And really stop to think. Because it's crucial. You know, we don't have much time, really. Suki's right. See it in Japan, you know, we're seeing it everywhere now. The earth cannot take it. If you had that many drills put in your head, I think you'd probably just crack right open. And that's what's happening to the earth. They're drilling, they're blowing her up, they're doing everything that you probably can do to destroy. So it's not a pretty story. And now we're in this together. We're not just alone here, Native people suffering and going through what we go through. It's not just in Palestine. You know, it's in the cities all across Canada that we don't see. It's the old people who are dying alone. You know, we got major problems here, people, just in terms of governing ourselves. It has to start, I think, back to the basics. And I think in this, if you ever get a chance, I don't want to leave you without hope, because this guy, Thomas King, he's a wonderful, wonderful writer. And I think he gives us a lot of hope, and just in, because he's comical. And, you know, he talks about how we see the world. And as much as, you know, as much as what I just said and how I go through, what I've had to go through, I've had to go through this road. I really feel that it's been a hard, hard road. And I had to come to the point of seeing things as they are. And having to figure out how to deal with it. Because when we go through these things, we don't just go through them with the mind. Our whole body reacts to everything. We are a whole human being. You know, my heart aches for the people in Japan. I have people there I know. I had two students who stayed with me from Japan. I looked up on the map where they live. I don't even know if they're still there. So when our world is small now, we know people, you know, as friends. So we're going to be going through, just like the people in Japan, just like people everywhere, we're going to go through our own personal, our own changes. Even here, as peaceful as it may be, yet as human beings, our greatest challenge is going to be to learn how to live in the unity and in the peace that we want to live in. That's our greatest challenge, because we know up here. But how do we work that out in our real life, in our day-to-day life? And for me, that begins with my spirit. And I'll tell you, every morning I get up and I face the sun. And when you look at that sun and you know where your life comes from that light, I'll tell you something, you'll appreciate a lot more where your life comes from. I do the four direction ceremony, and I think of the water, and I pray for the water that's all in the all that's in the water, and I pray for the earth that's all in the earth, and I pray for the air. Now, if we all became mindful of our very basics of where our life comes from, that might be a good start. Well, I'm a writer, and I'll just finish with a poem. I was looking through my writings, and someone mentioned about justice at the beginning there, so I thought, well, I was reading this poem I wrote back in 2006, I think this book was. Yeah. What is justice? Is it a dream? Is it based on human behavior? Principles? Raise the bar, be the judge, be the bar, a lawyer, a crown attorney, a court officer, a clerk, a court stenographer, court worker, court administrator, court appeal, legal aid, financial aid, charges laid, running the gauntlet of good and evil, right and wrong, and no in between, stalking the helpless to fill the quotas and the numbers of salaries and expenses, funding the banks on the backs of the poor and the helpless and the naive. That was written in 2006, obviously going through. I went through a lot, actually, in Toronto with my son, went through the court system. I was charged with aggravated assault and bodily harm, went through 14 months of court, thrown in jail. There was no grounds for it, but I still had to go through it. I had no right to say anything in my own defense. I was told to shut up in court. When I wouldn't go through the diversion, then they took away my legal aid. So I know what it's like to be accused and to have to go through a system where you have no rights. You're simply a number, because that too is an industry. So thank you very much for being so patient. You've been sitting there for such a long time. I really appreciate that. And I'm sure that you know, all of you who are here tonight, you obviously have a heart for justice. And when I see that, I feel like I'm in good company, and I feel that we have hope. Thank you.